Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello Serie A fan. After the bitter disappointment of their Nations League exit, Italy will have to analyse and rebuild, with only a European title for consolation. We chat about the performance of the players, manager and crucially fans as Donnarumma receives a warm welcome back to San Siro. All that plus delayed reaction to the Scudetto derby, keeping up the Italians and a tiny pianist on this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to episode 55 of Scudetto. And Kenny, welcome back off your week off.
Thank you very much, Oscar. Good to be back.
Obviously, last week we replaced you with Elaine from Milan Obsession to preview the Scudetto derby.
Yeah, it was much better. So thanks for letting yeah, me
thanks
letting
again
me come
to
back.
Elaine. And you've been actually moonlighting this week on her podcast, haven't you, returning the favour?
Yeah, yeah. I was very, very lucky, very fortunate to go behind enemy lines, I guess. Go on the Milan Obsession podcast to speak about Atalanta, which I'm sure all the Milan supporting listeners of that podcast would be very pleased with. But no, it was great. Really, really good.
I'm sure they won't mind too much after the result of the weekend, but we can get into that shortly. Let's do some beers, shall we? Kenny, you've got an old favourite for us this evening.
I do. I've got a Tempest Brewing Company Pale Armadillo. Quite nice.
Is that one of the ones that Bert has mocked the name of previously?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is one of the ones that... I think the fact that it's only got two words for its name kind of gets away with it.
I can mock it if you want.
It's very pleasant. It's a nice session IPA.
Lovely. How about you, Baz? What have you got for us?
I've got something that's called the Palm Tree beer, and it's an amber ale, and it's the last one of these quote-unquote weird beers that I purchased a few months ago. So I need to go on another shopping spree after this episode.
What was it? A pack of 12?
No, there was like... I think it was about 26 beers in total, but we did have a euro in between, so and an enjoyable euro at that. So
I was going to say you've been drinking those off air for sure.
A few.
Good to know.
And given the ones I don't like to my dog.
Yeah, given that you always pretend that you drink the least out of everyone on this podcast, and you only have beers when you're on, I think it's a bit of a revelation. Some investigative journalism just been done live.
If they knew the things I get up to.
Good. And I should let our listeners know we're still mid-table in the Tifosi Down Under Prediction League. Two correct scores, although not that many correct results, I think. I'll be back in the hot seat for the next round. But we're on an international break, so let's talk about the Azzurri a little bit. The unbeaten run comes to an end, and... Kenny, I think you were saying it was probably one of the best ways that it could have come to an end.
Yeah, well, it was kind of creditable in the end, given that Italy played more than half of the game in 10 men, and they played against one of the best teams in the world. Spain are still one of the best teams in the world. I mean, that semi-final was incredible at the Euros, and... to end up, you know, having that second half spirited performance, kind of keeping kind of hopes alive, and only going down 2-1, no shame in it whatsoever. The first half obviously was kind of to be forgotten, but there are positives to take out of it, and I guess one of the things is that they don't have this monkey on their backs anymore of, you know, trying to keep the record going. They can just perhaps play with a bit more freedom now.
Yeah. Baz, last week I asked you how much you cared about the Nations League. Do you care less about it this week? Or
I definitely care less about the final now that Italy are not in it. But I would say that close to what Kenny said. If you're going to lose a game, it's better to lose this game, particularly as you essentially qualified to play this final. So there is some prestige. I mean, Italy didn't perform very well yesterday. A lot of key players didn't show their usual level of performance, particularly at the back. But credit has to go to Spain as well. They really showed some fantastic football, and they outmaneuvered Mancini. And even before the sending off, they were probably the better team. Yeah. But I mean, there's no shame in losing to Spain, and perhaps those people who thought that this was going to be somehow an easy game because Spain have their own internal struggles underestimated the Spain that we also saw at the Euros. Maybe I think this result actually highlights Italy's feat over the summer much more than, because beating Spain is never easy, and of course Italy did it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I would actually add to what you said, Boaz, that in midfield as well, Italy got completely overrun. But I mean, something that I've seen pointed out is just how young this Spain team is, and how it kind of paves the way for Italy to do likewise. Tonali famously, controversially left out of this Italy squad and still in the under 21s. So perhaps it kind of, as I said before, perhaps like getting this monkey off the back paves the way for a couple of some of the younger players to actually come into the team as well.
And football is a game of episodes. And if Insigne managed to hit the target, at least with his shot when he was pretty much in the area by himself, then we might be talking about a completely different game here. Likewise, I think there is no arguing that Bonucci's second yellow card was a stupid elbow, and particularly on the one player who knows how to milk these things. Perhaps a yellow card for arguing when you're the captain is a bit much, although we really don't know what he said, so it's hard to say from here. But obviously that affected the spectacle. But I did enjoy Italy winning the ball very high up the pitch, and not really sitting back and waiting for Spain, despite Spain clearly being a slight level above them last night.
Yeah, and I guess we should pick out the positives. Chiesa again looking very impressive, Kenny.
Yeah. I mean, what could we? We've kind of run out of things to say about him. It's just like, yeah, he's a big game player. We say that every week. Every time there's a big game, we say Chiesa is a big game player. We know that now. There are huge positives to take out of it. I mean, just the kind of character of the team as well in that second half, when things aren't going your way, to kind of dig in and stay in the game. And Italy went into the last 10 minutes one goal behind, and they were, you know, for one thing, it was even as someone who was supporting Italy in the game, Italy were doing their best to try and level the kind of player count at times, like especially Chiellini. Anytime he was involved in any incident, he was straight in the referee's face saying card. He was doing all he could. But yeah, I mean, that's all it was. When you manage to keep the score to peg the score back to just one goal, then you're potentially one player being sent off away from having a real shot at getting something out of the game. And that's just testament to the spirit that Italy had, that they kind of kept that alive. And I thought the second half performance was actually very good. And Chiellini had a great performance after he came on. I've kind of ripped him a little bit there, but he was absolutely fantastic when he came on.
Yeah. And so the team was doing everything they could to try and get back into it. Do you think the crowd was doing everything it could to support the team, Bars?
So first of all, a distinction has to be made. The crowd booed and whistled the Spanish national anthem, and I think that's outrageous and really has no place in football. And the Italians were complaining that the English had been booing the Italian national anthem during the Euro final. And also they were complaining about like flags being ripped out of people's hands and stuff like that. But this is no better. And it's, I think, particularly Spain and Italy, it's not like they're at war. But even if they were or had been at war in the past, it makes no sense to boo another country's national anthem. However, when it comes to booing a former player of yours, I think there is a fine line. And
a former player of Italy.
I mean, a former player of Milan.
Still plays for Italy, doesn't he?
I think perhaps it's slightly counterintuitive, and I probably wouldn't have done it myself, during the game at least. But I think a lot of Milan fans are quite rightfully angry at young Gigio Donnarumma and feel that he did not act in the best interest of the club, which is completely in his right. But at the same time, some of his proclamations during and also in the build-up to this game, how much he loves Milan, how much he follows the results and stuff like that. It's just like, spare us the act. There is no need for it. We understand you went, you made your millions, and that's all good. You just speak the truth. Ultimately, this is, I think, his main error is a complete PR cock-up. That's nothing to do with how good or how bad of a player he is. But I think he deserved his whistles yesterday. And if he should, he's a big boy now. He should learn how to take them.
Ouch. I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying about the fact that, you know, he came out and said all this stuff before the game and was essentially pleading with any Milan fans that happened to be at the game not to boo him. Presumably, there were a lot of Inter fans that were booing him as well just because he was an ex-Milan player. I don't know, because it seemed like at times the entire stadium was on his back. But I just question, I mean, if you're buying a ticket to go and watch the national team play, I mean, how do you think that's helping? Like, how do you feel that's supporting? It's obviously a completely different matter and there are whole different levels of seriousness with it, but it kind of fits into, in terms of logic, although not perhaps in terms of, you know, ethics and morals, it kind of is on a par with people booing the England players for taking the knee during the Euros. It's like, how do you think this is helping your team? Like, well, you're turning up at the ground to boo your own players. Why?
It's a good parallel, actually, because obviously, even though we might think it's completely wrong and ridiculous, it's something that people feel strongly about. Can they not just put it to one side?
So I think as long as the protest is somewhat civilized and it's just whistling and booing, it's fine. But as I said earlier, I wouldn't do it. And perhaps we're looking for logic with people who don't necessarily demonstrate too much logic. As a slight, as an example of that, when it was still 2-0, Donnarumma made a very good save to not make it 3-0. And the same people who were booing him suddenly started shouting, "Gigio, Gigio." So, I mean, they haven't even decided what their own message is going to be. I think it is perfectly cool to criticize Donnarumma over the summer, but maybe not let it affect the national team. I wouldn't have acted like he did, but it's water under the bridge, and I think most Milan fans should also consider that. And if you heard, there was an interview with the Milan president on Italian radio this week, and he wished Donnarumma all the best and said he's decided to try a different adventure. So if the guy who essentially has lost the most money out of this can let water go under the bridge, I think it's time for everyone else to as well. I still won't name him, though.
Maybe they were booing his agent, as we could revisit Kenny's comments about Raiola.
It has to be said, regardless of him, of them booing him or not, the guy has a mistake in him every game, as proven yesterday when he hit the ball inexplicably, slipped out of his hands and hit the post. And some people said, oh, the crowd has made him nervous. But he does this week in, week out. He's done it with PSG. And I've been watching PSG, unfortunately, to see what young Messi gets up to. And I've seen Donnarumma drop a few balls, look a little bit uncertain, as is normal. He's in a new environment. But it's not like this was out of character. This is part of the keeper he is. He makes amazing saves, and then he has crazy lapses of concentration, which most times don't result in a goal, but occasionally will.
And I guess if you're that type of keeper, being sat on the bench for the majority of league games is not something that helps you maintain your concentration. I mean, that type of player kind of relishes in being on the pitch game after game, and you kind of iron out the mistakes. That's not happening for him at PSG.
Particularly because he's a young keeper. He's been around for seemingly forever now, but he's only still 22 and he still has a lot to learn. I think he's far from the finished article, but perhaps his agent and also the newspapers who think he's the best keeper in the world, maybe they're slightly got to his head.
Yeah, well, he's got a chance to play a couple more games in the next week, because we've got the third place playoff of the Nations League on Sunday, which I'm pretty sure France have just won that game, the other semi-final, so it'll be against Belgium. And then, arguably the more important game, the World Cup qualifier versus Switzerland on the Wednesday. What do we make of that one? I think we said before that this is a really, probably the most important group game that they'll play.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said after the previous game that, well, after the previous round of games that we weren't expecting Switzerland to go and slip up in Northern Ireland, and Italy kind of got out of jail a little bit there. But yes, Italy have got a chance to kind of all but secure participation in the World Cup. And again, we kind of cast our minds back to where Italy were pre-Mancini, and this is just another opportunity to kind of draw a line under that. And huge game, one that they should win, and you know, I have every faith that they will get the job done.
And Switzerland dropped points again away at Northern Ireland in the previous round, and they're playing Northern Ireland again, so perhaps that will give us a clear picture of this group even before Italy kick off against Switzerland.
Yeah, definitely. That game against Northern Ireland is in Switzerland tomorrow night, so it should be an interesting one. See how Italy can bounce back from the disappointment of being booted out of the Nations League.
And can we, sorry, a slight tangent, but why is there a third, fourth place final in this stupid competition? I mean,
I was like wondering that myself. But I think the reason must be it's to replace friendlies, right? So you don't want to have an international break where you haven't got a game suddenly. So
yes, sir.
I'm sure Italy and Belgium, who will be facing each other in Turin, are really looking forward to this spectacular affair.
Maybe. Anyway, I was just going to say, speaking of reliving disappointment, Kenny, we're going to have to get your take on the Scudetto derby. I said last week on the pod that I think even you might predict Milan as the winners, and you said you were going to put me right and actually picked Atalanta. So,
I did pick Atalanta. I was thinking there was kind of a feel good factor going into this, with Atalanta having won their first home game in the Champions League in front of their home crowd. So obviously they played home games in front of their fans at San Siro, and they played home games, you know, behind closed doors. But I don't know, that obviously didn't carry over. Milan were excellent. Milan were the better side, if we're brutally honest. I mean, Atalanta, I didn't think actually played that badly in the first half. They had two horrific mistakes that essentially, saw them kind of chasing the game, really. And after the opening goal, which, and I said this, anyone who's listened to the Milan Obsession podcast will have heard me say this, Musso had a clanger in the first minute, which obviously led to Calabria getting a second bite at the cherry and getting Milan's opener. I think 9 times out of 10, Musso doesn't do that, and Musso has been excellent for Atalanta since he's joined, and he was excellent for Udinese, but, you know, we're all human. I thought after that, Atalanta did very well, and Maignan pulled off some incredible saves. It was a great game. It was a great game up until Freuler had a bit of a panic attack when he saw Tonali closing down on him. And yeah, all credit to Tonali for being a pit bull and, you know, taking advantage of a situation where he had absolutely no right really to score from. I think he was the only Milan player pressing. Freuler had options, but, you know, panicked. And after that, Atalanta just ran out of ideas. Second half, Gasperini tried to make some changes. It didn't really work. Ultimately, the 3-2 result flattered Atalanta in the end. I thought the 2-0 result flattered Milan at halftime. But I feel like the final score, 3-2, flattered Atalanta on the whole, because over the 90, Milan were comfortable winners.
Yeah, I know you were sending some slightly panicked messages to the WhatsApp at one point, Baz. But did you agree with that? Do you feel that it was a deserved victory?
I felt it was a deserved victory, with a strange segue of two goals from Atalanta. One which was clearly derived from a foul on Junior Messias in the build-up, something that Italian TV picked up on. But Zapata pulls his shirt and then also trips him up. I don't know what VAR is doing in this occasion. And one from a slightly unfortunate penalty, because although his hand is is stuck very high, the ball bounces off another part of his body and goes up. One of those ones you can't really predict, but overall a stellar performance from Milan, and something that I didn't think I would ever say, but a tactical masterclass from Pioli. When he arrived at Milan, he was kind of considered a one-trick pony, and essentially maybe the first season and a half he did stick very much to the same formation. But now there seems to be some great innovations, perhaps born out of the personnel he has. But on both the first and the third goal, Theo Hernandez was playing as kind of a regista defensive midfielder role, when ostensibly he's the left back. But he pulls into the middle, and Atalanta didn't really know how to cope with that. And I think that's something that was also seen with the other, the right back, Calabria, who got on the score sheet. And realistically, you don't expect these two players to be so far up the pitch constantly, and it's something that they've really worked well on. And you can see Kessie, who actually had a good performance, drop into defense. Benacer is a phenomenal player, and his passing ability and the way he holds onto the ball is phenomenal. So I think now that Pioli has been able to handpick his personnel and kind of fit them into his system, it's really a glory days. I'm not saying that Milan will necessarily win the Scudetto or win a trophy, but it's definitely going to be a fun season to watch. And what more can you ask for as a fan?
Yeah, it was almost Gosens-esque and Hattabor-esque the way Hernandez and Calabria turned up for those goals.
So perhaps I think there is something that, but from my memory, Gosens and Hattemberg stay a little bit more wide when they go forward, so they're entering the box from the side, whereas it looks like Theo Hernandez and Calabria are attacking the box from the center of the box. But I've not seen enough of Atalanta to make that statement. Something that does link on to what you just said is that Gasperini himself was very complimentary with Milan, and he's usually a little bit grumpy, so for him to come out and praise the opponent and generally speak positively about other players was quite eye-opening.
Yeah. I thought deserved. Milan were the better side.
Great to see them showing some tactical range.
We've mentioned this on a much older podcast, and maybe it's a slight repeat, but you have to remember that less than 3 years ago, Milan lost 5-0 in Bergamo, and it was probably the low point of the Pioli. It was definitely the low point of Pioli's tenure. And at the time, people were talking about maybe sacking him. So this shows how far Milan have come.
Yeah, and they currently sit in second on 19 points behind only Napoli, who are still the only team in Europe with a perfect record so far. They won 2-1 coming from behind to beat Fiorentina. Another impressive display, wasn't it, Buzz?
Fantastic display, and it's crazy how quickly the players have adapted to Spalletti's ways. Napoli don't give away a lot of chances, and they create a lot of chances on the other end. So I'm not surprised that they're up there. In this game, again, they went under. They seem to kind of enjoy being slightly in difficulty. We remember at the beginning of the season they had a player sent off in the game against Venezia, but they always find a way to pull through. And in this game, they kind of mimicked a Dortmund training routine for a free kick, and it worked fantastically. I mean, maybe teams playing against Napoli should check out Dortmund's entire repertoire right now, just to make sure. But again, they kept plugging away, and they have so many options and so many great players that I'm not surprised to see them high up in the league. Although this run of form with wins against, let's not forget, Fiorentina and Juventus in there has been remarkable.
Yeah, and to me, Napoli, and Boaz said there that he's not getting carried away with Milan. But to me, on the evidence of, we're nearly a quarter of the way through the season now. To me, on the evidence of what we've seen so far, Napoli and Milan are the two favourites for the title. Inzaghi's Inter, this might be a bit controversial to say, but Inzaghi's Inter and obviously Allegri's Juve, which is becoming more and more like Allegri's Juve with every week that passes. You know, they're not, to me, they're not of the level of Spalletti's Napoli and Pioli's Milan. Spalletti, who, yeah, as Boaz says, it's incredible that he's managed to get the buy-in to his kind of methods so quickly. They just look absolutely phenomenal. And Pioli seems to have done what, I guess, with a young group of largely unproven players, really, still, we've got to say. I mean, there are a couple of champions in there, obviously, and it's something that Milan have done well, is kind of, you know, with bringing Zlatan in, but Chiar has been a real leader. And I honestly believe Giroud, I know that his introduction was kind of curtailed with the whole COVID thing, but I think that's another really, really shrewd, experienced signing. But basically, Pioli has managed to do what I think people perhaps doubted he would be able to do this season, which is take Milan on that other level. And to me, those two are the ones that are really looking like the favourites to compete for the Scudetto. I think if not this year, then when, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, the table's not lying to us for a change then. I guess the other thing in this game that we just have to mention, unfortunately, is what happened after the final whistle. Koulibaly, obviously, being racially abused by Fiorentina fans. We've spoken about it before. It's obviously just not in any way acceptable. It needs to stop. There needs to be stronger action against it. I mean, what more can we really say about anything to add on that, guys?
Yeah, it's shocking. And I think, I mean, Boaz said this before we started recording, but I think the really depressing thing is the fact that fans are just getting back into the stadium, and this is what they choose to do, you know. And it is hopefully the minority. It appears to be the minority, but this is not the first time. Even though I am an Atalanta fan, Atalanta fans have got a lot to answer to for the way they treated Vlahovic. You know, despicable behavior there towards him, just because of the country he comes from, and you know the stereotypes that there are in Italy about that. Koulibaly, I mean, it's really depressing that we're speaking about this again. It's something that you kind of hoped society was past. You kind of hoped football was past. And, you know, the clubs are coming out and saying all the right things, but unfortunately, there seems to be a section of football supporters. I think it's globally, but we're speaking about Italian football here, so let's not bother with whataboutery here. There is a section of Italian football supporters who seem to think that this is, a motivating factor and a reason to turn up to the stadium to abuse people because of their nationality, their ethnic background. It's disgusting. It's we're in the 21st century. It was never acceptable, even in the 20th century, but we hoped we'd move past it. I don't really know what else to say.
Yeah. Buzz, were you speaking then, did you say?
I mean, I back everything that Kenny said there, and I think that the only slight suggestion I could put forward is that the league needs to be a lot more involved. The country even needs to be a lot more involved. It seems like these things happen, and yes, the clubs act quickly, and they find who the people are. And as Kenny said, the clubs are making all the right noises on social media. But at the end of the day, this is it's a social issue, and it's something that needs to be addressed from a much bigger perspective. The same people who go to the stadium and abuse someone racially, I'm sure they don't walk down the street and shout at people down the street, or go into their office and insult someone who's of a different creed or color or whatever. There's something wrong with this concept that once you walk into the stadium, you can say and do whatever you want.
Yeah, nothing to argue with in any of that. I guess let's just move on. Although while we're on Fiorentina, we should mention that it looks like Vlahovic won't be renewing his contract with Fiorentina. Obviously, it looked like he might have been going over the summer. He ended up staying, but looks like he could be off in January, doesn't it, Buzz?
It's quite curious how Comiso has chosen to go about this. In the past, you would kind of keep your cards tightly close to your chest so that no one would know, but he's gone out immediately and said, Vlahovic has rejected the contract, and as far as we're concerned, he's on the market now. I'm not sure what that will do to Vlahovic's valuation, but he certainly has suitors around Europe and also in Serie A, and his contract runs till 2023, so it's quite early to start this song and dance. But maybe Comiso has seen some of the things that have been going on in Milan and has figured that it's better to start the song and dance early.
Yeah, and a huge blow to Fiorentina's what was looking like a very good start to the season as well. Because I mean, if you lose Vlahovic in January, that's a big part of what other clubs feared about Fiorentina all of a sudden no longer there. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, you do wonder where the goals might come from. Certainly, attacks looking a lot blunter without him. Speaking, Boaz, of song and dance in Milan, there's a new mayor, or a new old mayor in town, Beppe Sala, re-elected, and looks like there might be some action taken on the San Siro renovation project, or rebuilding project.
I will believe it when I see it, but it looks like things have moved slightly closer. You remember last year we had this strange project announcement where fans could pick one of two different stadium printouts. And I think, I'm not sure if they're going with the one that won then or what's going on, but essentially San Siro is going to get knocked down, which it's very sad news for me because it's a stadium where I've seen 95% of my football games, and I have a massive San Siro tattoo on my back, as all my friends know. So
I'm going to get it lasered.
It's next to my Duomo, Milan Duomo tattoo.
But, and scrubbed out Gigi Donnarumma.
Undoubtedly, the something had to give. And if you consider that Milan are making about half as much money as Juventus are, despite having a stadium that's much bigger, and that they're making a quarter or less of the money that Barcelona and Madrid are making on their match day revenue, it makes sense to modernize. It's just sad that an icon, so to speak, is going to be lost to this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you look at the finances, and I was reading a couple of days ago that both Milan and Inter are looking to treble their match day revenues through this. I guess it kind of is a bit of a no-brainer. And I think it was, the Corriere della Sera reported a few days ago, they kind of had some insider info that it looks like it's going to be the populist design, which is the one that it supposedly mimics the Duomo of Milan. But to be honest, it's some quite creative licensing there. It's basically a square stadium, and if you stand in the corner, it kind of looks a bit like there's a point, which is what supposedly mimics the Duomo of Milano. But if this stadium gets over the line, then big news, big news for Serie A, really, and might be the end of us seeing clubs like Atalanta up there, because if Inter and Milan join Juventus in these astronomical sort of match day revenues, then perhaps they will kind of reach the heights that they reached beforehand back in the sort of 90s and early noughties and 80s, etc. But yeah, I mean, all good. Italian football needs to move on, needs to catch up on this front. So hopefully this is good news for both Milan clubs.
Yeah, as I've said off air, Kenny, it's all right. Once Atalanta gets a billionaire owner, they'll be able to compete stadium or no stadium.
Yeah, sovereign wealth fund. Here we come.
The only way to go.
We should just mention one other game from last weekend that we don't really have time to talk about. But Bologna 3, Lazio 0 was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Particularly as we gave Lazio good week and Bologna bad week.
Exactly. And Mihailovic seemed to be pretty much out. Everyone had him down as being out, and now here he is tied on points with Lazio, Juve and Atalanta. It's like, how do you, as a Bologna owner, how do you get rid of Mihailovic when he's got you level on points with those clubs?
So, I think, yeah, that job football, is, hey, safe at least for a few more weeks.
Yeah, and Aaron Hickey getting his second Bologna goal. So he's the first Scotsman to score since Aaron Hickey 2 weeks ago or thereabouts.
But a job that was not safe was Roma CEO. They've today appointed Pietro Berardi to replace outgoing Guido Fienga, obviously part of the Friedkin shake-up. Elsewhere, Lautaro Martinez joins the injury list, getting injured on international duty. It's a blow to Inter. And Sergio Romero, formerly of Sampdoria, has left Man United on a free to join Venezia. Boaz, you've got some more news for us about Italians abroad.
I'm here for the Keeping Up with the Italians. The main news from this week, I think we will all agree, is Sir Claudio Ranieri being appointed at Watford. As has been said in other publications, it's kind of a miracle that with all the clubs that Ranieri has changed over the years and with all the managers that the Pozzos have gotten rid of, it's a miracle that this intersection hasn't happened earlier. But
I'm here for it.
I'm totally here for it. And I think you'll do well. I think Watford is the kind of club that kind of runs on its own. And regardless of who's in the helm, they stay up or go down. It doesn't really matter.
Let's see what happens if they make Sissoko captain.
We have to see. And let's not forget that he did a really good job at Sampdoria. He took over when they were bottom of the league. He finished 11th and then he finished 9th, which are the two best finishes for Sampdoria since 2013, I believe. So I think he'll do well and I'm glad to see him back. In any case, moving on quickly, the Keeping Up with the Italians might as well be called Keeping Up with the Italians in Turkey right now, but Adana Demirspor got their 10th point in 4 games. This is Montella's Adana Demirspor, with Balotelli scoring his 4th goal in as many games, so good job for him. And Andrea Bertolacci has scored 2 in Fatih Karagümrük's 3-1 win. So again, not a player that's known for goals, but he's gotten quite a few so far this season. Elsewhere, keeper Alberto Brignoli, formerly of Palermo, Empoli, and kind of Juve, although he played on loan for a lot of other clubs, kept his first clean sheet on his debut for Panathinaikos. And Filippo Falco got his first goal in the Serb Super League for Red Star Belgrade in a goal that, again, don't mean to be insulting to any of our Serbian listeners, but the pace did kind of look like a pub league. And there were a couple of players carrying a few extra pounds, but such is life in the Serb Super League. And since we're talking about average leagues, I want to give a shout out to Claudio Repetto, who just won't stop scoring for Charleston Battery in the USL Championship. He's got 9 now in 14 games. And this is a guy who's made his career in this USL, which is pretty much the second division in the States. But anyway, he's been a journeyman in some strange lower division in the States and scoring everywhere he goes. So good job, Claudio.
Yeah. So apologies to all of our listeners from all of the countries that Baz has just offended in that section. let's move on to the honourable and dishonourables. And Kenny, let's start on the positive note with a goals honourable, shall we?
Yep. And I'm sticking to my guns here on just the single goal honourable per episode. And it has to go to Candreva for Sampdoria's 3rd against Udinese. Just an absolute rocket from out of nowhere. There's not really too much to say about this goal, just that he absolutely smashed the shit out of it and it sailed into the top corner. It couldn't have been struck more perfectly. Ultimately, Sampdoria celebrated wildly and Udinese went down the other end and equalized. So it finished 3-3 in what was the result would suggest was a great game, but I watched it and my God, it was so scrappy. But great goal.
Good stuff. Baz, you're going to praise at least one Italian goalkeeper today, an honourable for Gigi Buffon.
Gigi Buffon is sometimes known as Superman, and apparently this skill extends to areas outside of the football pitch. There was a video released by Parma last week, just after we recorded, and it showed Buffon essentially beating about 14 of his teammates in a row at a game of rock, paper, scissors. Now...
Legend.
If he is Superman, he can look through people and see what they're doing behind their back, so he could see that. But if you look at the video, he kind of sees what he always delivers his hand the 2 seconds later, just so he can see what's going on. So quick reflexes from Gigi Buffon when he cheats at the rock paper scissors.
Yeah, good technique from saving penalties, I guess.
It's a great watch because he goes really wild. Every time he beats, he's looking them in the eyes, psyching them out. It's like penalties.
I'm going to give an honourable buzz to your boy, Teo Hernandez, who scored for France on his second ever game for the national side this evening. And it's the week of his birthday as well. So happy birthday. Kenny, you've got a curious honourable here for St. Ninians.
Yeah, the St. Ninians High School. Yes, so they might not be St. Trinians, but St. Ninians did produce Liam Henderson and Aaron Hickey. And I have to admit to being an absolutely awful journalist here and not double-checking this, but St. Ninians High School claims, and who am I to doubt their claims, that when Liam Henderson and Aaron Hickey faced off against each other in the game between Empoli and Bologna, it was the first time ever that two Scots had come head-to-head in Serie A. So honourable to them. A school producing, two Scots playing against each other in Serie A.
And on a completely different note, Baz, this is a mention for a micro pianist.
This is an honourable for Italy under 21 star and Inter player Samuele Mulatier, who, besides being a very good football player, is also an accomplished pianist. He's Rai TV released this video of the young man playing something classical on the piano and kind of really getting into it. And apparently, this was his idea for how to psych up his teammates. To be honest, I'm not sure like a bunch of 21-year-olds and under are going to get psyched up by some geezer playing the piano. But good on him for the skills.
And I've got another Milan-based honourable for, I guess, for both Milan and Inter. For playing away from home simultaneously for the first time ever while the San Siro was being prepared for the Nations League games, I believe.
Ooh.
I'm not sure if it's an honourable or a dishonourable or what, but I thought we ought to mention it. Buzz, you've got one for, how do you say it, Haug's father.
Yeah, this is honourable for Jan Ingvard Hauge, who is, I believe, Jens Peter Hauge's dad and probably his agent as well. But in any case, a Milan fan tweeted him last week asking him, can you please give us your side of the story about why your son left Milan and he's such a great talent, how we're missing him. I mean, normally people don't respond to this kind of tweet and especially don't respond in a nice way. But he said, I honestly can't tell you why Jens was sold, but look at Leao, Ibrahim, Rebic, Salemaker, so much talent, so much skill. Who should go instead? So, I mean, it's nice to see. And he said no bad feelings at all. So it's nice to see that the Haug family have got good heads screwed on their shoulders. And I do hope that someday we'll see the kid with a Milan shirt again in the future.
Yeah, maybe certain other ex-Milan players' agents could take some tips from this sort of approach.
Topical.
Kenny, this is not a goals honourable, but it's a... goal celebration honourable.
Yeah, for Vialli. I mean, how can you not give Gianluca Vialli an honourable when he celebrates like that when Italy scored the goal to get one back against Spain? Mancini celebrated as you would expect a manager to celebrate, and Vialli celebrated as you would expect Vialli to celebrate. He just kind of like... just like the sheer look of like determination and come on guys, let's do this in his face. It's just a joy. And also, I mean, I tag on an honourable to Chiesa for how unselfish he was for that goal, to have, you know, created it and then, you know, at the very last minute to side foot it to Pellegrini to finish off. Despite the result, nice scenes. And we said earlier that there were positives to take out of this match. So there's a positive right there.
Yeah. And is this one a positive, Baz?
Nope.
Nope.
This is dishonorable to Italian journalist Paola Ferrari, who is a longstanding TV journalist who does all the Italian football for Rai. And she assigned the two Spain goals from the other night to Fernando Torres, who apparently is out of retirement and playing for Spain again.
About time you put some more in for him. I just wanted to give a quick honourable to Cagliari's Keita Balde, who became Serie A's top Senegalese scorer of all time with 40 goals. So well done to him. But as I assume, this is a dishonourable.
It's one of those weird stories. We've covered stories like this in the past, where usually involving Lazio, where money somehow gets into the wrong hands. But this is a story of Fenerbahce, who purchased Micha Zac from Empoli all the way back in 2019. And apparently they transferred the final rate of the transfer to a car dealership in the Netherlands instead of Empoli. So they've been struggling for months to try and get this money back, and they finally managed to be paid back by this Dutch car dealer, and now they've finally paid Empoli. So it's a great story. 830 million euros.
Wow.
On the topic of misplaced investments, what sense have you been up to?
So this is a story about Perma Crocked Inter midfielder Stefano Sensi, who seems to miss more games than he plays, but apparently he's invested in a Milanese startup that launched an algorithm to monitor and prevent injuries to professional footballers. I mean, it's very ironic. I hope this algorithm helps him out, because he missed out on a Euro as part of his injury crisis, and he's a fantastic player, but hopefully his investments are more sound than his knees.
Indeed. All right, thanks very much for that. That is all we've got time for this week. If you don't already, please do subscribe to our podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your audio. We'll be back soon. Until then, enjoy the football.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.